Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Rockland City Council, Rockland Public Financing Authority, and successor agency. Our first order of business this evening is, well, first we'll have roll call. Sorry, Barbara.
Vice Mayor Butler.
Here.
Councilmember Yule.
Here.
Mayor Janda.
Present.
And newly Councilmember Broadway.
Here.
Councilmember Magnuson is excused.
Okay, thank you. Our regular meeting will begin at 6. We're going into closed session, but first order of business is the oath of office, swearing in of Ken Broadway as city council member, our new city council member. Welcome, Ken.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Ken Broadway.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And faithfully discharge
the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
The duties about to which I am about to enter.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Would you like to take any pictures with your family at all before
sure,
we disappear for a bit? Feel free. You want to come up? Yeah.
Yeah.
The party of the red.
The
we should probably just stand.
Yeah.
That was crap. Okay. So let's.
Yeah.
You never did this for me.
No. Okay. We'll take a couple. First one. 1, 2, 3. We'll do. And last one. 1, 2, 3.
All right, thank you.
Do you want to? All right.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, welcome, Ken. I'd like to be the first to welcome you to our team and look forward to many years of working together.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Dave, you'd like to say anything?
I just very briefly, you know, we had one job to do when we were making this appointment, and that was to find the most qualified, capable person of filling Diana's empty seat. And we did. And I think we did it through a very clear, transparent process that left everybody with the confidence that we did what we set out to do. So congratulations, Ken. I look forward to working with you as a fellow council member.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor.
I, too, I'm very proud of the process, and I'm very proud of the results. So succinctly, welcome aboard, and I'm glad you're here.
Great. Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll be going into closed session, discussing the items as they appear on the agenda. And is there anyone in the public who'd like to comment before we go into closed session? Seeing none, we will go into closed session and report back. Thank you. Good evening and welcome to the regular session of the Rockland City Council. We came out of closed session earlier and there was no reportable action, excuse me. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Barbara, roll call.
Vice Mayor Butler.
Here.
Councilmember Broadway.
Here.
Councilmember Yule.
Here.
Mayor Janda.
Present.
Councilmember Magnuson is excused.
thank you. And again, for those of you that just joined us, we started at 5 o'clock and to go into closed session, and just want to welcome again Mr. Ken Broadway to our council. We're sorry you weren't here earlier to see his swearing in. It was wonderful. And thank you again. Ken, you'd like to say a few words before we get going?
I just want to say it's an honor to have been appointed to fill the seat that was vacated by Diana Ruslan. She was an amazing member of our city. We have a wonderful city, and I look forward to the opportunity to serve and to give to our city. And so it's a pleasure to be here with you and to serve the citizens of Rockland. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Before we get into agenda review, we have council reports. Any reports? All right. Seeing none, agenda modifications, consent calendar modifications.
Mr. Mayor, if it's okay, I'd like to pull item number 15 off for just a brief staff report.
Sure. Anyone else?
No, thank you.
Does any member of the public wish to pull an item off the consent calendar for discussion or questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the agenda or the
pulled
number
15. Calendar.
I'm sorry, the consent calendar, removing item 15.
Second.
It's a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, Dave, item 15.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I am supportive of this step. To provide an expedited path for the developer to move forward on this property, but it's just kind of unusual, and I just wanted to hear from Mark, sort of the rationale why, and perhaps you just take a separate vote on this particular item.
Sure, be happy to. You're correct that you don't typically see a project come to you before in this manner. And the reason we're doing this in this case is that, as you mentioned, the developer is very much interested in advancing the project forward quickly. In particular, they want to do some subsurface investigation on the site and determine how much rock are they going to be dealing with, for example. The project, by and large, is very similar in terms of its layout to the original approval that was achieved some decade or so ago, a little less than a decade ago. There are some changes, as been indicated in the staff report. Staff felt like if it didn't take this step, or the intent of this step coming before you was so that everyone in the public had an opportunity to understand that their intent is to move forward and to move forward quickly. We didn't want them to go out and start doing earthwork and the citizens not know what was occurring and not understand that and perhaps draw the wrong conclusions. So we felt like this was a good step to take to give everybody complete transparency. Now, the developer understands that if this step does move forward, that they will be signing at-risk forms. We've shared them with them already that clearly indicate that they are not, there's no vested rights by virtue of this type of approval. They understand that. They understand that they have to go through the traditional planning process and go to the planning commission for their project as a whole, so they're aware of that as well. They just want to get some work done up front and really know what they're going to get into, so they can realize that this is a bigger undertaking than they're currently considering.
So just very briefly, in summary, it's a parcel on Pacific Street in downtown Rockland that burned down in 1915, was never rebuilt. And they're going from a sort of a traditional mixed use with high-density housing and retail perhaps on the street front to all high-density housing with a higher density of housing. So really our choice, and we get more affordable housing units, affordable slash workforce housing units out of this switch. And the reason is to get more rooftops in downtown Rockland to activate retail. And so rather than filling, having the project include more retail that we then have to fill, it's giving more rooftops to activate existing retail. So that's kind of the in summary. And then obviously this will go to Planning Commission and design review, and they could see do what they want to do. But we're just giving the sort of perspective of the council to give you all permission to go ahead and work on this. And then Rick had already said that the original development agreement had already given the city manager the discretion to go ahead and do this, and you're just running it through us, you know, for public, the interest of public disclosure. So I'm happy to move the item when we're ready.
May I comment as well?
Yeah, I've got comments too.
Council, if I can just add an additional piece of information. The cost of units due to sewer impact fees, water impact fees, traffic impact fees, all those type of things, make it very difficult to do any high-density housing, let alone to have a percentage of affordable housing. It gets hard for the price points to be there. So the additional housing units enabled there to be a
economies of scale,
thank you, to allow this project to move forward. We've had numerous potential buyers over the last 8 years who have walked away from the project because they just could not make it pencil financially.
Yeah, that was one of my comments was related to the affordable housing part of it. I know we've approved some higher density multifamily type projects, but not necessarily whittled down our arena numbers. Will we have an opportunity later on if they go through the subsequent planning processes to sort of address those? And
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, great.
Well, now, yeah, to that point, the staff report does indicates that these developers are intending to build affordable housing, and how do we make that pencil when it's already a very challenging?
Actually, they will be building at least 10% as a minimum, but they're going to try to do a larger number than that. So okay. The 10 is part of the conditions,
okay.
But they're going to try to do more.
So, by way of a little history, this was the very first project when I got on the council, I think, or the first year, and it was the first mixed use project I believe that the city. Tried. And yeah, it just, I've known the owner and the financing doesn't work, nothing works. But we at one point talked about creating a flex use sort of a opportunity. And so where if you had units like this, that some of those units facing the front, the street could become little art studios or something else that might, you know, accentuate the downtown streetscape. And was there any conversation about something like that? And I mean, not that you're requiring that as a condition, but you would allow that in time to maybe take place.
That is a conversation we had with them early on. I'm not certain that that's something that they're interested in entertaining. We will continue to have that dialogue with them as we move forward. I can tell you that we are talking to other developers on other sites in the downtown where those are precisely the type of conversations we're having with them as well.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Good. I would suggest, Council, that any residential unit who wanted to consider a commercial purpose in the future, we'd be happy to entertain those conversations.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Kevin. Okay,
great. Thank you. So, Mark, the outline here suggests it's mostly consistent with the size and scope of the original project, with the exception of a movement towards the residential.
Correct.
Okay. And so this provides at least 10% of the affordable, which does, as the councilman stated, move us towards those RENA numbers that we certainly are desiring. And then while it doesn't include the original non-residential, it certainly provides an opportunity for those existing retail locations that are in close proximity to this location with that number of residential units. Yes?
Correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Would any member of the public like to comment on this item? No. We'll bring it back to council for...
I believe Vice Mayor made a motion.
I made a motion to move the item, Resolution City Council, City of Rockland, of intent to initiate amendment of ZL Rockland General Development Plan to remove the requirement to construct non-residential development, increase the maximum allowed residential density within the plan area, modify development standards as necessary, PDG 2016-0005.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Next on our agenda, we have citizens addressing the council. Any member of the public can come to the podium and address the council on any item that is not on the agenda. We can't take any action, but we certainly would like to hear what you have to say.
And thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. It's a pleasure to be here in one of the finest cities in the state of California. I'm here for three reasons, but first and foremost, I wanted to congratulate Mr. Broadway for your appointment to this council and to congratulate the council for making such a fine appointment. Ken, you've done everything right. You've been on the Planning Commission, the Parks Commission. I see you at all the events, so I think you're well positioned to do a great job for the city of Rockland. So congratulations, and I look forward to working with you. You're welcome. Number two, I served with Diana Russlin on the Capitol Corridor Joint Powers Authority. I just want to let you know at our last Capitol Corridor Joint Powers Authority meeting last week, we were able to secure financing for a third track to Roseville. Can't get it quite to Rockland yet, but we got a third track. We got we're able to move some money around, $78 million for two more trains coming from Sacramento to Roseville. So that'll help Interstate 80, and that will help the city of Rockland in certain ways.
Excellent. How many trains a day come to Roseville?
There's
right
just
now?
One now.
Only one. Yeah. So the only one to Rockland and one only to Roseville.
Yeah, and only one to Auburn.
Right, right.
And none stop at Loomis.
Oh, wow.
Well, one of the council members there was always trying to get it to stop. And I think the only reason he wanted to stop there was so people could leave Loomis.
So. Great. Good work.
And number three, before our board meeting this morning, we were able to accept the new bookmobile. It's state-of-the-art bookmobile. I don't know, the last one we had was getting pretty tired. We were able to secure some funding from the Air Pollution Control District because the old bookmobile was a polluter. And so anyhow, it'll be serving from Roseville clear up to Tahoe, and certainly some of the outlying areas of your city will be able to benefit. I know some of the senior communities will be welcoming the new bookmobile. It's really state-of-the-art.
Excellent. Great.
And I would love to stay for the rest of your meeting, but I have to go up to a little hamlet named Penryn that requires my attention. So anyway, right. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Supervisor.
Thank you, Mr. Supervisor,
for making the trip here.
Appreciate your updates. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Anyone else in the public like to address the council? Seeing none, we'll move on to bid action, item 19, Whitney Community Park Amenities Upgrade. David.
Good evening, Mayor Janda, members of the City Council. David Mullenbrook with Public Services Department. As you're aware, the Placid Valley Tourism Group is a strong advocate for getting increased heads in beds, as the saying goes. And one of their arms to promote that strategy is to assist local governments with sports facilities and making improvements to sports facilities. To that end, we partnered with Placer Valley Tourism, or PVT as we'll call them, and they awarded the city a grant in the amount of $388,000 to conduct some improvements at the Whitney Community Park, namely related to the ball fields, replacing the bleachers, installing scorekeepers' booths, and also installing bullpens on the four ball diamond facilities. Earlier in July, we went out to bid for that project. The bids came in higher than the $388,000 grant award, so we notified PVT, and their board ultimately approved a grant award. They increased the grant award by $37,000 to $425,000. The lowest responsible bid was $415,000, so we have that amount covered as well as a 10% contingency. And we are therefore recommending that the council award the bid to the Dominguez Landscape Services Group for the Whitney Community Park Upgrades Project, and also approve the notice of exemption for that project as well. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
One question that just comes up is, I'm not completely familiar with Dominguez Y. I know they do quite a bit of work in town as far as landscaping and maintenance. Are they a general contractor? Can they do some of the construction type things that are required, or just a landscaper?
We too knew Dominguez Landscaping as mostly a landscape maintenance company, and so we did ask for references, which they did provide, and we were pleasantly surprised to get very positive reviews about their construction arm of their business. They've done work for Sac State. They've done work for other jurisdictions. They've done park improvement works, and so we felt that they're adequately qualified to perform this work.
Okay, great. Anyone else have questions, comments? A member of the public like to comment on this item? A representative from PVT.
Hello, council members. My name is Kim Summers with Placer Valley Tourism. And again, thank you for hearing this item today. And we're just very excited with the partnership with City of Rockland and the Public Service Department and Rockland Pony, who has been very instrumental in working with this project. So we're just very excited to get going. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kim.
As always, Kim, yeah, thank you. Yeah, we really do appreciate the partnership.
Absolutely. We'll bring it back to council.
Mr. Mayor, I would move to approve. I'm sorry, I keep misplacing my agenda. Number 19. There it is. Number 19A. Can we take this A and B? Okay, I would move to move number 19A and B.
I will second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much, Kim. Please extend our thanks to the rest of the board. Great. Thank you. Okay, item 20, reports from city officials, discussions, potential action items. Guest quarters. Laura.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. Thank you. Staff was recently asked to bring forward an informational report regarding how guest quarters were currently being addressed in Rockland. So we're doing that for you at this time. Historically, the city has classified single-family residential units as either a primary residence or a secondary residential unit that meets the definition, use, and size characteristics of those units. So I'm just going to give you a brief overview of that. In abbreviated terms, a secondary residential unit can either be attached or detached from the primary residence. They may have a completely separate entry. They can include full kitchen facilities. They can be issued a separate address. They may have a separate utility service. They could be a rental unit, and they can have multiple bedrooms. They must also meet the same setbacks and height limitations as the primary residence. They can't exceed 40% of the square footage of the primary residence. Off-street parking requirements apply to these units to reduce the potential impacts on the residential neighborhood. Impact fees are also applied at building permit in most cases that are similar to those collected for the primary residential units. And much of the regulations the city has regarding second units is dictated by state law. Approximately 1 year ago, the Community Development Department was approached by new home builders that were interested in providing what they were calling guest quarters that are integrated with single-family residences with a full kitchen amenity, a single bedroom, and they weren't intended as rental or entirely independent units, but more to accommodate a market demand for extra living space for extended family members, aging parents, adult children, or other similar situations. The builders were also looking for relief from the standard impact fees for traffic and parks, et cetera, that would normally be charged if a guest quarter was defined as a secondary residential unit. So in response to this request, the Community Development Department staff undertook an internal study of the issue and developed a policy interpretation which was designed to allow flexibility but also minimize the impacts of these uses and their potential effect on the neighborhoods in which they might occur. The basic premise was if the purpose of these facilities was to accommodate extended family and other similar situations, that it should be integrated into the home rather than clearly a separate component from it. The number of bedrooms would also need to be limited to reduce potential impacts on parking and other city facilities and services. The distinction between a secondary residential unit and guest quarters was clarified through an ECD policy statement that was prepared in 2015. And that included the following points. The guest quarters must be located in a residential zoning district. The guest quarters must be attached to the principal residence. There must be an internal connection between the guest quarters and the principal residence, so no separate entry. The guest quarters must be served by the same utility systems, water, sewer, electric, HVAC. They must have no more than one bedroom and couldn't exceed 40% of the square footage of the principal residence. A minimum of one garage parking space must be provided in addition to the parking already required for the principal residence. The guest quarters must share the same address as the principal residence and may include separate cooking facilities. There would also not be subject to additional impact fees or firewall requirements, separation requirements, if they met all these conditions. The policy determination has received positive feedback from the development community and, to staff's knowledge, has made it simpler and more financially feasible for new home builders and existing homeowners to accommodate the need of extended family and other situations. In preparation for this item, city staff also researched how guest quarters and secondary residential units have been addressed by other local jurisdictions in the region. The results of that search are in a table in your report, but I'll briefly summarize them here. So we looked at Auburn, Elk Grove, Folsom, Lincoln, Roseville, and Placer County. Most have a definition for guest quarters, but none of them allow full kitchens. We're the only ones that allow that. The majority do not charge full impact fees for guest quarters, only building permits, school fees, utility fees, things that we would also charge for guest quarters here. And some require use permits or other special conditions, like you have to have the owner of the house be the occupant, other things that we don't impose because we assume that it's more integrated into the unit than others. So at this time, it appears that our policy determination provides the greatest amount of flexibility in terms of allowing guest quarters through the definition by allowing kitchen facilities with regard to exemptions from the impact fees for these features, as well as ease of process when compared to nearby jurisdictions. To this point, we believe this determination has been successful in meeting the market demands experienced by home builders and the desires of existing residents while minimizing the potential for negative impacts on residential neighborhoods. With that, we hope this has been informational, and any additional questions or feedback from the council are invited.
Thank you, Laura. Is this a current policy?
Yes.
Okay, so this is already in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Scott.
Well, being the one who asked staff to bring this before us, and it was just coincidental in that my question was really to explore the opportunity to make it more family-friendly, and unbeknownst to me that staff had already been working on this, so thank you very much. And it's good to see that, you know, that we are supporting certainly families and aging parents, and I think that should be something we ought to market a little more, as you know, within the city. Certainly be proud of that. Question is about the parking. If you could clarify the parking.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a standard 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, let's say, and you want to add a mother-in-law quarters or something.
The guest unit?
Guest unit.
Guest quarters.
Essentially, you're converting a bedroom, maybe adding a small kitchenette or something, and meet all the requirements. Mm-hmm. What happens to the parking requirement again? I'm not sure I'm clear.
The single-family residence itself would have the requirement for 2 spaces, usually in the garage is where it's accommodated. So they would have to provide 1 additional space. So if the home already had a 3-car garage, for example, they would already automatically meet the requirement.
But in that scenario, a 3-2, 2-car garage, they wouldn't be able to build it. Doesn't say if they have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
Bedrooms and baths don't matter. We just base the
parking requirement. Well, in your scenario, you said they would be required to have a garage with 2 spaces in it.
For a standard single-family home.
Yeah. And then they add a guest quarters. You're saying they'd have to have a third space.
They'd have to have a third space.
Space or garage.
And you can't build an extra garage.
We've said space. I was just giving the example of if you had
parking on the driveway.
Yeah. If
or a side pad.
Right. You'd have to have a side pad, or you'd have to have a third component to your drive or your garage already to meet it.
Okay.
So you can't necessarily rely on the street. It has to be something on the property that can accommodate that third.
Correct.
Vehicle. Now, is that if you're just converting an existing room? And it doesn't matter whether you're converting an existing room or building an extension to the existing home.
Right.
It doesn't distinguish.
No.
If it's new build, it's obviously
sure.
incorporated.
And built in and incorporated, and more likely it's going to be a three-car garage. If we look even in our Midas Ogrinnet areas, there's a lot of side pads they built for a camper or other trailer things. So most cases, those that can be accommodated.
Right. The idea is to have these be seamless in the neighborhood to not create parking issues and those sorts of things, but still accommodate them as easily as we can.
Right. I think you've achieved that, so thank you.
Are we aware of a number, you know, roughly how many units? Or, I mean, is there much existing out there, or are there a lot of requests for this yet, or is it just more?
Primarily, this was initiated, as I understand it, by a home builder request for new homes, and so there are a number in the new subdivisions that are coming forward with these designs that are available. How many conversions we've had of existing residences, I'm not sure.
Okay. This issue originally arose when Scott Yule was mayor, and we had a request from a citizen who was fairly new for us, and I think we worked through that one. It took a little time, but I think the combination of that early in-house request plus new development request led to this new policy. So I think
correct.
Started, though, when you were mayor.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. A few questions. The demand, as you're having conversations with this developer or these developers, could you characterize the demand, how significant it is, how many units are we talking about, that or percentage of a development might include these units, and what types of demographics are folks looking at in terms of that demand? Is it boomerang adult child? Is it grandparent, so they don't have to be in a long-term care facility, which costs a lot of money?
I think the demand is all those types of things, even, you know, college kids going to school, living at home, wanting to, you know, save money, that sort of thing, but be a little independent from the family. Certainly aging parents would be a strong demographic for that. Still want their independence, still want to cook for themselves, perhaps, and those sorts of things. In terms of numbers, I would say there's maybe, on the developers that we've talked to, maybe one or two of their home products in a subdivision that of their, you know, maybe four or five different types of homes that would offer this. How many individuals actually want this amenity? I'm not quite sure how many have come forward.
Okay. And then with the competition that you showed up on the screen within the Sacramento region, we'd be the only ones that would provide the kitchen.
That is the big difference between us and any of the other agencies. We're the only one to allow a full kitchen.
So given that, I think it's a great opportunity for us to market that and also continue to market that we're striving to provide a diversity of housing choice, a diversity of housing options to meet the demands of the public, I think, and our residents. I think that's really important for us to communicate. And then also last point, two more questions. Do you have a sense of where geographically in the city these might take place?
Primarily in the newer building areas, so I would say Wildcat area in Whitney Ranch, possibly the Two Oaks development, but I'm not sure if they took advantage of it.
Okay, and then the state's kind of moving in this direction already, trying to encourage, remove barriers from construction of these types of units to achieve.
Right, there's new legislation that they're looking at that might even reduce the ability to require parking in some cases.
So. Okay, all right, thank you.
Council, if I may, this may present an opportunity for some to use these units for like an Airbnb opportunity. I think the positive of this is we've already addressed access points through the house. We've already addressed parking. So we've already mitigated any potential issues in the neighborhood to a large degree, you know, without a separate entrance and parking. So even if it moves to that or evolves to that, I think this policy has mitigated some of the concerns that might arise.
Okay.
First of all, Councilmember Butler, I was going through my list of just checking them off as you asked all the questions. So you hit on all the questions I had. So thank you.
Dave tends to do that.
So, and Laura, thank you. I have a question actually for the chief in relationship to the introduction of an additional kitchen in a home. And not knowing the size necessarily of the homes or the types generally, but is there any public safety concern as you double the number of appliances, the number of stoves, whether those be electric or gas? Is there anything that we should be thinking about from the standpoint of standards or anything in that regard, ordinances relative to in having two kitchens in with the restrictions that we have in place?
With regard to the multiple appliances, and I would say that there's no necessary safety concerns that are addressed there or become an issue there. Obviously, they're going to be built with the standards of any construction, and those things will be mitigated in that process. I applaud this because this is something that we're starting to see a lot of. Especially with our ethnic communities, and they tend to congregate large families into single homes, and so I applaud this because it gives them a methodology of doing it correctly versus converting garages and things into living space, which we tend to see on a fairly frequent basis. So this is encouraging.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chief. Great. That's all I have.
All right. Is anyone in the public like to comment on this item? None? Okay. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
We'll go on to item 21, Police Department Strategic Plan for Fiscal Year 16-17. Chief?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you. I have presented to you a very robust 28-page strategic plan. I don't plan to go through it page by page tonight, if you're okay with that, but I would like to touch on just a few things. Firstly, a strategic plan in the police department, our objective here in sharing it with you is our ongoing commitment to transparency and being open with the community. So when I direct our troops over the next 12 months, where are we going to focus our energies? Where we're going to focus our resources, I think it's important to share that not just with the council but with the community as well, because we're an open and transparent police department. So our strategic plan, many corporations or governments or cities, departments will do a 2-year or 3-year or 5-year. I've even seen 10-year strategic plans. We've learned in our police department, especially through the recession, that 1-year plans are best for us because it allows us to be more nimble with resources and focus our resources on exactly the areas we need. And the truth is, in the policing industry, things change so quickly and trends pop up and emerge on a rapid basis, so we need to be able to update our plan on an annual basis. Our plan also every year allows us an opportunity to look at our police mission statement, our vision statement, and our value statement to make sure it's still congruent with our community's needs. Our plan here that we presented includes our guiding principles and our methodology. But in essence, what I'm going to touch on tonight is our strategic goals and objectives. There's 7 of them for this year, which we will accomplish before June 30th, or aim to accomplish before June 30th. All 7 goals are derived from the City Council's strategic areas of emphasis. So those are our goals. The objectives are very specific to the police department, so you'll recognize some of those. In the plan as well, that I won't go over tonight, includes those City Council strategic areas of emphasis, the factors that affected our strategic planning, in other words, outside factors such as the economy, city growth, Proposition 47, those type of impacts. And then our internal SWOT analysis, which is our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats specific to the police department. But I'm not going to go over those tonight. But I will go over our goals. Our 7 goals. So goal number 1, promote effective government. You'll see to achieve a reaccreditation. We've been a CALEA agency since 2008. We are reaccredited every 3 years. It's not something we pick up every 3 years and just do. It's something that's ongoing. It's a daily, weekly, monthly maintenance item.
This year is our reaccreditation year, and in December we'll have auditors. Two of them will descend upon the police department. They'll probably interview you. They'll interview our employees. They'll interview our community. They'll look at our policies, our procedures. They want to ensure that we're in compliance with federal, state, and local laws, that we're in compliance with their standards and best practices. And if successful, we'll receive reaccreditation in March of 2017. Goal number two, again, promote a safe and secure communities to implement strategies to address high crime areas. So we implement what's called ROCSTAT, and ROCSTAT is kind of a real cool name for we stole it from New York and L.A. New York has CompStat, and L.A. stole it from New York. They call theirs CompStat. Well, we had to call ours ROCSTAT. Mm-hmm. In essence, it's the whole department using crime data and traffic data to do smart policing, if you will, to analyze where our issues are so that as a department we can focus our resources on the right places. So using crime analysis and crime data will identify the top areas of criminal activity in the city, collaborate internally with the entire department to address those issues, conduct an analysis of our current geographical patrol beat structures to ensure the most efficient deployment of resources and response times, implement data-driven approach to crime and traffic safety, enhance our misdemeanor book and site release program from the police department to discourage misdemeanor crime. The fire department's always got to upstage me like that, every time. And then conduct a per capita crime index for each patrol beat to ensure that a more accurate reflection of crime rates, that we share that with you. Goal three, implement strategies to address traffic complaints and traffic safety. Again, this is part of ROCSTAT, but it's utilizing crime analysis unit to identify our top collision data areas as well as our complaint areas. We'll conduct an analysis of traffic unit effectiveness in reducing traffic collisions and addressing traffic complaints, monitor our progress of implemented actions by measuring an increase or decrease in traffic collisions, and then, of course, increase use of social media to create community awareness of laws, events, and enforcement programs. That is a two-way communication, so while we push information out about where we might have a DUI checkpoint, or we might be enforcing traffic in a particular week, we actually announce that to the community because we're more about education than we are wanting to enforce the laws. So if we can educate people to slow down and drive safely, that's better. But we also receive complaints that way. Somebody might have a speeding complaint or a stop sign complaint on their roadway, so they can notify us through, you know, they can pick up the phone, they can come into the police department, they can use Comcate, they can use Facebook, they can use Twitter, and we engage in those conversations with them. Goal number four, this is an important one for us, to engage community youth through current and new innovative programs that support quality of life by building character and values. I say this is important for us because we're right about 22-23% of our population's under the age of 18. So we have a very young family-oriented community. So as your police chief, I recognize that our future is our youth. So the more of those type of relationships that my police department can build with our youth, the better our future is going to be. So our programs, current programs, we want to maintain them. That includes our school resource officer program, our annual school safety plans, our Explorer program through the high school, police service aid program through Sierra College and William Jessup, our juvenile diversion program, every 15-minute program, our child ID, Police Activities League, Lemonade with the Law, and there's also Cocoa with the Cop now, by the way. Mm-hmm. Great programs. Child safety education classes at our schools. And then this summer, we just started two new ones, Bicycle Safety Fair or Bicycle Rodeo, and our Junior Police Academy. I'm very proud of this because our Police Athletic League, actually, it's a nonprofit. They funded this program. And we realized that age that we were lacking was middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We did a really good job at the elementary school in reaching out to them. We've done a really good job at the high school, but we were missing that middle school. So we did a junior police academy this summer for the first time. We had 28 kids, and they spent a week with us. They learned how to do car stops, talk on the police radio. They did all kinds of stuff. They ran around Quarry Park. I actually went running with them once and lost my breath, so I only did it once. But it was a great program and very positive feedback on that. Great. Goal number five, improve our 911 center efficiency. This is our emergency dispatch center. Explore short and long-term enhancements of staffing in the 911 center. Staffing in the dispatch center has been problematic for a long time. It's difficult to recruit and retain personnel. So we want to review current staffing model, assess current shift schedule, consider alternative shift schedules, an analysis of recruitment, hiring, training, and retention practices, a workload study completed on our 911 center. We'll do that internally, by the way, not a contractor. So our crime analyst will actually do that analysis. A review of previous study exploring consolidation possibilities and develop systems of accountability through call audits. As a police chief, you'd think that the first interaction we have with the public is at our front counter. The truth is it's over the phone. It's when people call 911 or they call into their dispatch center. So our quality control checks, if you will, largely are through our call audits in dispatch. They're all recorded. So we actually go through and do a very thorough analysis of how we're doing. How are we treating our public on the phone, and how's that going? Goal number six, enhance investigative efficiencies and crime solvability rates. So this is primarily our investigations unit. We're going to perform a workload analysis of our investigations unit. This, is again, will be conducted internally by our crime analyst. Ensure adequate staffing, tools, and training to maintain top-quality investigations. We're going to host a quarterly or biannual regional criminal investigations meeting. That's with all the detectives with the Sheriff's Department, Roseville, Rockland, Auburn, Lincoln, Citrus Heights, to make sure that we're talking about regional crime trends and what's affecting them that could be also affecting us, because often our criminals don't abide by geographical boundaries and city limits, so we have to talk about outside the city. Collaborate with the Placer County District Attorney's Office on areas in which we can improve our criminal investigations, and then develop a system to track crime solvability rates, report the results regularly to police management staff, and share those results through our ROC staff. And then finally, our seventh goal is to determine appropriate police staff for all city events. This is has largely to do with Karen Garner and her department. We've discovered that all of the city events that occur through the city, like concerts at the Quarry Park or Wolfstock or Run Rockland, Cool Cars Hot Chili, Patriot Day, public safety fairs, we haven't had a really good measurement of what do we need. I mean, we use our professional estimate based on crowds, crowd anticipation, the type of venue, but there's not really a system in place. And so we want to build that system so that we automatically know, okay, you need two police officers for that type of event that has 500 people plus alcohol or whatever. We haven't had that established, so we want to create that. And that's it. Those are the goals we plan to accomplish by June 30th, and happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Chief. Dave, any questions?
Thank you, Chief. I'm an organizational management type person, so I really like strategic plans. But I especially like the language that you use to set up the strategic plan and the focus on peace officers as opposed to law enforcement. I think creating that culture from the very beginning is just great, not only internally but also externally. So I want to thank you for that. I'm really appreciative of the focus on the traffic, speeding, and safety, the investigations unit, the collaboration, the misdemeanor process that you've started that you're going to continue. That's great. Using technology and IT to focus on, you know, high crime areas. And then the emphasis on communications is really important, as we talked about. Offline, the two-way communications, not just pushing information out, but utilizing multiple channels to gather information from the public so it's accessible. It's great. So two questions. One, used a phrase in there, areas of crime and disorder. I've never really noticed the disorder word before. What does that refer to?
Well, fortunately, we don't have a lot of crime or disorder in Rockland. I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm. We have a very low crime rate, and we've maintained a low crime rate in our region for, gosh, well over a decade. We've continued to be one of the lowest crime cities in the region, if not Northern California. But that doesn't mean that we don't have crime. And so I need to keep our troops focused on where the crime is. And if that crime starts to take a foothold in a particular area, it will lead to disorder. Mm-hmm. You've heard of the broken windows theory. So I mentioned DDACs in here as well. It's really focusing on hot spots, if you will, and watching those crime trends by day, by week, by month. Are they happening at midnight? Are they happening on a Tuesday? Are they happening in the summer or the wintertime? And then deciphering what those are so that we can deploy the right amount of resources at the right time to prevent the disorder.
And then second question, we talked a lot about coordinating with other entities on a lot of information sharing. Is the tribe part of those discussions with respect to the Thunder Valley Casino? Because I would imagine that that's an attractor for people who, you know, have a lot of fun and then go out and do some mischief. So is that, are they part of those conversations?
That's an excellent point. To answer your question, no, they're not and they haven't been, but that's a really good point. We do have occasion when we will arrest drunk drivers that have come from the casino, where we've had people get lost because they miss their off-ramp and they end up in the middle of Rockland. I'm not sure where they're at. So I think that's a good discussion to have. We are the only agency that has tracked incidents that were specifically related to the casino. And my predecessor started that when he was chief. And I discovered that we're the only agency that was tracking that through a grant application process that we were trying regionally. And our cities of Roseville and Lincoln were not tracking those. But we did. And so it was interesting to see how many we thought were related to the casino. But that requires a conversation. So in other words, every car you stop, you have to say, did you come from the casino or where did you come from? So it's kind of dissipated over time since the casino's been there this much, but we still try to track those. But we haven't had those discussions. It's a good point. I think we should start.
Ken?
Well, I'm going to, again, concur with Councilmember Butler. I really appreciated the reference, and I'm going to read it specifically. The goal is not to be a law enforcement agency, but rather a peacekeeper. And I think that speaks well to what you, Chief, and every member of your team does. I think it's great, and it's represented. It's represented in what we see here in Rockland. So thank you for all you do. I did want to ask a question in regard to your internal department factors. You reference public safety staffing, and we have 58 sworn officers currently. I think that number is actually lower than the number we had sworn in 2009. So can you speak to your staffing numbers on sworn officers, and where are we relative to where you see us needing to be?
Sure. Actually, we'll be adding a position in January, which will bring us to 58, and that is where we were in 2009. Through the recession, we went down to 51, and we've been able to build back. So now in January, we'll be back to where we were. And the truth is, we used to measure staffing in the police department by population. And the magical number, and for some reason in my industry, was 1 per 1,000. So for 1,000 residents, you'd like to have one police officer. But that's not accurate. It's not true. A more accurate measurement is what type of calls are we going to, how many calls, like call volume, and then what type of calls. I mean, are we going to stolen sprinklers from the lawn, or are we going to armed robberies in progress? So in our community here, we really take a look at, well, what is our call volume? What type of crimes do we have? For example, you can have another city, I won't name them by name, but you can have another similar city of 60,000 people in our Sacramento region here that has a much higher crime rate. They're going to need more peace officers because they've got a lot more calls going on and they've got a lot higher crime rate. I believe the number we have is adequate for keeping our community safe. Would I like more police officers? Of course. But I can't sit here and look you in the face and tell you I don't have enough, because I think 58 gets the job done and it keeps us safe.
And then to follow up on that, then the ability for us to analyze that data and have the analysts in place is a key factor in us understanding where we are, where we need to be from a staffing perspective.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Scott?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, Chief. Yeah, so, I mean, we are actively analyzing the data to make these budget decisions or proposed staffing requirements now?
Yes. Our crime analyst that we brought on board maybe 2 years ago, fantastic hire. So we were able to actually look at our call volume each day, weekdays and weekends, and determine where we were most busy. We pick up at about 10 in the morning, and we stay busy till about 2 in the morning. And then from 2 in the morning until about 9 or 10 the next day, we slow down. So we were able to shift all of our resources around, of course, working with the Police Officers Association and coming to those agreements. But we were able to shift our resources where our call volumes were the most and have a good balance there.
Okay. Thank you. How's the how's our public safety volunteer program working, and certainly that helps you achieve your goals and objectives, and maybe you can just speak to that.
Yeah, thank you. It's working fantastic. I mean, we typically have between 100 and 120 volunteers, and they do absolutely everything. They work on patrol. There'll be extra eyes and ears on patrol. They'll work our front counter. They work with detectives. They, about 2 years ago, became a foundation, so they became their own nonprofit so they can raise funds. They're about to purchase a canine dog, which they purchased our last one, so they're about to purchase another one. That's about a $20,000 price tag. So they've raised funds for us. Just phenomenal people, and they're amazing, amazing folks. And honestly, the quality of what we do in the police department, we couldn't do without them.
Well, and while I would like to give you all the credit, I think we also have to acknowledge that we have a great citizenry, and you do so in your report as well, which certainly makes makes it special to be here in Rockland, frankly. How are we doing with equipment, vehicles, things like that? And it wasn't a lot of discussion about future needs, current stock and where we're going on that.
Yeah, actually, our equipment's top-notch. We are the only agency in Placer County that routinely wears body-worn cameras. I think the city of Auburn does. I'm not sure they're 100%. But the big agencies do not. And so they all have cameras in the cars. We're the only ones with each patrol officer that has their own body-worn camera. That's cutting edge. So we were first on that. We're first on a lot of things. Our dispatch center is very cutting edge. We were the first ones to take cell phone 911 calls in our county. So our equipment has always been very top-notch. We've taken good care of our folks. As far as the fleet, the cars go, we've actually worked with fleet closely to make it more smart. So we don't run out vehicles. We don't have cars that have 110,000 miles on them. We actually turn them over quicker, but we have a smaller fleet. So the price tag is actually less, but they're turning over more quickly. And we're transitioning from the sedan. You might recall the Crown Victoria, the Ford Crown Vic. They're not making those for police units anymore. So now we're transitioning to the SUV, which is in our city we're going with the Chevy Tahoes. Cost is the same. The vehicle's bigger, and it's just a much better product for us.
Okay, good. Yeah, that Crown Vic was the worst undercover car in the world because everybody knew that was a cop coming down the street.
But you can't call it a police car.
No,
you'll have to call
okay.
it a police SUV in the future.
Just I would say thank you, to your leadership. Thank you to the entire police department. The interaction you have with the community, I think you're very cutting edge there too. I think, the Facebook and the outreach and this doesn't happen, without a lot of work. So thank you. And through your efforts, I know that our citizens certainly respect our police department as they should and well-deserved. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great. My comments are pretty much similar to Scott's closing comments. I mean, this doesn't happen by accident. We're a recognized community in the region for being safe. Well-run, well-managed, and that's not only covers all departments, but certainly your department. And it's not by accident. It's by hard work and planning and the engagement level you have with the community outside. A lot of communities, I think, the only time they engage the community is when there's an issue. And you've been very proactive about engaging the community in other areas with volunteer programs and a number of the other programs you mentioned. That changes the image, or at least raises the image of at least our police force and being community partners and not just law enforcement, like that was talked about earlier. So I really appreciate that. Embracing technology and using that smartly, working smarter. Everybody can work hard, but are you working smart and efficiently? And there's no doubt your department is, and greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Does any member of the public like to comment on this topic? All right. Seeing none, we'll go to item 22, renaming Two Oaks Park. David.
Once again, David Mullenbrook, Public Services Department. This brief report is simply a reminder to the City Council of past direction that was provided by the Council-appointed Parks Naming Committee as well as the City's Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission. As the neighborhood park in the Two Oaks subdivision is nearing completion, and with the elimination of what was going to be a park in the Whitney Ranch neighborhood at Lot 68. That park was previously designated to be named Wickman Park, and with that park now being no longer the Parks Recreation Arts Commission last year suggested that the Two Oaks Park be renamed the Wickman Park, and so that's the direction that we are moving in. It's anticipated that the park will be complete. We were hoping for the end of this month, but we're very close to the end of this month, and it's not quite complete. The landscape equipment has, or the play equipment and the landscaping has all been installed, but the turf has yet to be installed. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, that park will be complete, at which point we'll organize an opening ceremony, park naming ceremony. So again, just a reminder of past direction that was provided for the naming of this park. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Any comments?
Dave? Well, I'm down the street from Twin Oaks Park, so I think this is really going to help eliminate the confusion. So,
a little less traffic by your house.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, item 23, Planning Commission vacancy. Barbara, do you have anything to say, or do you just
want me to just add to the report?
Sure.
Well, as you know, a vacancy has occurred on the Planning Commission. And whenever an unscheduled vacancy occurs, a special vacancy notice must be posted. Appointment to the vacancy must not be made for at least 10 working days after posting the special notice. The special notice was posted on September 19th, and therefore the earliest you can appoint is on October the 3rd. So we're just seeking direction on whether to appoint a planning commissioner from the current list of qualified planning commission and city council applicants or follow the traditional recruitment process.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone like to chime in on sort of your thoughts or how we should go about doing that? Scott?
Well, you know, we had a rather extensive process for the planning commission back in May. And certainly, coming off the heels of another rather extensive process for the appointment that you now serve, it would seem to me. I mean, I think I could support working with that pool of candidates. I would also add, and correct me if I'm wrong, but even though we have a process for appointing anyone, frankly, with an application process, I mean, there's nothing to prevent any council member for nominate or, you know, making a motion to nominate anyone to fill those seats. You know, just you need to convince two others to accept that. So while we have a process, that process really is more a guide or to, you know, create some organization to it. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are a lot of names on there that have expressed interest to serve. So, I mean, I would be comfortable with doing that. But then the other big question, the bigger question is, you know, do we hold a special meeting or our next council meeting is the 11th.
October 11th.
Correct.
Right.
So I guess, I mean, I would support working within this. And again, there's no reason when someone couldn't nominate someone else, even off the list. You're not restricted by any rules or law.
Our traditional process is a biannual process to fill several seats. And so this is just an unusual circumstance. And then,
yeah, it's not something, hopefully, that mm-hmm. occurs a lot. So mm-hmm. I would support that process. But I don't have anything to offer for whether we do a special. I'm open and probably to that side of it.
Okay. Dave?
Well, you know, call me Tom Transparent or Carl Consistent. I think it's important for us if we've identified a process to fill positions that we follow that process so that we're, you know, like I said, transparent and consistent and folks can't necessarily, they're going to accuse us of stuff anyway, but at least we can stay with a straight face. No, the process was open, transparent. We gave as many people the opportunities possible to participate. Somebody may, now with an opening on the Planning Commission, perhaps wasn't considering it before, and now they're considering it now. So I would just encourage us to follow that process. In fact, that was the rationale that I used for helping shape the appointment process for the city council position was. This is the process that we take for an opening on the Planning Commission. I understand this is a unique circumstance, but so was the city council position. So that's what I feel most comfortable with. And I, you know, consistency is the hobgoblin of small mind. So I guess I have a small mind, but that's what I'm most comfortable with.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Don't call me a hobgoblin.
I will call you small-minded. No, I don't disagree by any means with you. I mean, in fact, I won't name names. When I first got on the council many years ago, we didn't have much of a process. So I was the one that was really pushing for a consistent, you know, process. I bring this up. I suggest that maybe we don't do all those steps this time only because we have a vacancy to fill fairly soon. And now we start talking about 60 days maybe to this process or something, and then moves into the holidays and all that. But, I mean, I'm open to either one. I'm not hard-pressed one way or the other. But I think doing so promptly, mm-hmm. you know, and if you're doing it rather promptly, it's kind of hard to really advertise it as broadly as you would normally do in this consistent manner that you're talking about. That make sense?
I understand your point.
Okay.
Is there any, I don't know if this is a question for Barbara or Deanne, any minimum time requirement if we were to entertain applications? Do we have to wait 3 weeks or a month? Could it be as short as 5 days or a week? I mean,
yeah, the actual process is at the council's pleasure.
Okay.
So there's no existing city policy or procedures on that.
Okay. So I would kind of suggest maybe contacting those that have applied in the past instead of just automatically throwing them in the pool, see if they're interested. If they are, we can just essentially use what they've already submitted, not having to submit a whole new application, and then maybe a short window of time for anyone else that might be out there, whether it's a week or 5 days or something, just not to draw it out, and then come up with a list of at least people who are interested. And then possibly just go through our normal planning commission interviews. Yeah. All right. Don't get to. Yeah. So that's just my suggestion based on what you guys were throwing around. All right, Ken.
Well, I'm going to be another small-minded individual and recommend that we remain consistent in the process. I believe we have a process for the appointment. Now, again, does that need to be a 3-month process? I don't necessarily believe that. That always takes that period of time. We can define what that looks like, but I do believe we want to be consistent in how we approach this. And I think we have a number of individuals that have expressed interest. Others may also have interest, so we provide the opportunity for them to submit an application. It then gives us a large pool. We saw a tremendous number of talented individuals, both with, I believe we had 6 applicants earlier this year for the Planning Commission, and then we had 19 for the open seat. So, again, I would strongly encourage us to remain consistent with the process and to follow that process.
Can I add to that?
Sure, sure.
I certainly want to be a part of the small-minded group because I, too, am transparent as well, but there are some timing issues on this. I just want to clarify that, right? Mm-hmm. We normally go through about a 60-day
It's normally a 2 to 3 month process.
Yeah. Process. So, yeah. Okay. So before us, we also have an election here. So, do we want to just wait until after the election to make the appointment, or that also enters into this? I think if we're going to now push this off, could we do this by the 11th, by the next meeting, or the second meeting in October? Is that? That's not consistent, by the way, is what we've done in the past. So we are deviating from
consistency. It's the same process. It's a shortened process, but we're still.
The process of interviewing and going through that process is fine. It's just that the timing is, you know, we've just got some things to consider.
Right.
And I'm comfortable with an expedited timeline based on what makes sense for the calendar and so forth and the needs of the Planning Commission.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Normally we keep the application process open for a month. And then we set a special meeting thereafter for interviews, and then you appoint, it could be the next council meeting.
So our next council meeting is
October 11th.
It's in 2 weeks.
Council, may I suggest that you be prepared to do interviews so you can have an appointment on the 27th of October, that you allow the clerk to contact the 2 lists that was referenced, to see if they have interest and carry their applications over and allow for a 2-week application period for any new applicants.
If
Fine. I have a question then. So would the direction to Barbara be to use the same, just the same application that we used for the previous Planning Commission search?
That would be consistent.
Right. I don't know. What's the council's thought on requiring, if there are any folks who applied for the city council to fill out an entirely new application, or is that one sufficient? I know the questions might vary a little bit, but.
I'm comfortable having them use that same application.
Yeah.
It's within a reasonable period of time. Mm-hmm. For what it's worth, I think you meant the 25th of October. I'm not going to be here.
But that's a council meeting, right?
Right.
So we can appoint essentially whatever night we do interviews. So we could do an interview.
You can call special meeting.
Yeah, we could call a special meeting.
Like, right. Like okay, good. Barbara, I'll let you know what my availability is because I have a conference.
Can I get clarification? The people that have already applied, if they're interested, do they need to resubmit an application or will you take the current application?
They've indicated they would take the current application.
Current?
Okay.
The current? Yeah, the current application.
Thank you.
But we need to verify their interest, though.
Right.
Yes. And then a deadline for accepting any new applications, maybe 2 weeks? Okay. And then a special meeting hopefully shortly after that. Before the 25th.
So funny, I was walking neighborhoods last week, and one woman said, the only problem I have with you Rockland people is you're so small-minded.
So with that time schedule, it looks like the week of October 17th, you might be able to have a special meeting with a two-week advertising if you guys want to consider a date or time.
Okay.
Do we want to do all that, schedule all this right out right now, or do we want to have Barbara contact us?
Either way.
We could be.
That week looks really good.
I can make
for
that
me.
Work. Yeah. Any day in that week work.
Yeah. I'm not good for. I'm only available Thursday, Friday.
All right. 20 or 21st. Okay.
And I'm not available on Wednesday that week.
All right. So Thursday, Friday looks good.
And I'm not available Friday, so it means it's Thursday.
I guess it's Thursday.
See how easy that was?
See how they're playing Friday?
Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Next on the agenda, announcements and brief reports. Anyone have announcements?
We did talk about the Main Street downtown initiative from the Placer County Economic Development Board. We're hosting a bus tour on October 1st. Is that right, Troy? And October 28th, we're hosting a workshop in Roseville that's going to be open to the region, talk about the intersection between downtown development and promoting innovation. And that's a partnership between U.S. Bank and the National Main Street USA program that Placer County is hosting for the entire region, only one of five cities across the country that are participating in this. So I think it's a great way for us to lead in this space. Also, just quickly, an item that we discussed last week or last time, the landscape competition that was agreed to push off till spring to allow us more track time to develop that and market it appropriately. So I just wanted you to know about that.
Anyone else? Nope. City manager report. Anything to comments?
Rick, would you be willing to just maybe summarize or touch on the Department of Food and Ag issue, cultivation, or summarize that?
Yeah, my report stems from the notes that actually derived from Laura Webster, who had attended. And a lot of it is not new, but there were a couple of things I thought was significant. Obviously, if a city county prohibits cultivation within our jurisdiction, the state will not issue or override that. But a couple of the parameters came in that the draft outline indicated that a grow site would need to be more than 600 feet from a school, I figure that would be something that would be disconcerting to you. Also asked if they would include requirement of any type of buffer or physical separation between a grower's property and the boundary of a jurisdiction, which we had a lot of concern about, and they said no. They don't seem to be providing a significant avenue for feedback. It's kind of following the same pattern that we saw, frankly, with the county. But we will go on record to state our concerns for whatever it's worth, but we wanted to bring this to your attention because it may take a political intercession to try to address this with the appropriate people.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any future agenda items?
Well, we talked about the response and prepping our ordinance for the potential passage of the recreational marijuana ballot proposition. Has staff looked at that? What our timing needs to be on that?
Staff is working on that. It has a report for staff for tomorrow. So okay. It is something that's being looked at.
Okay, thank you.
And I just have a couple things for city attorney. I have to report that there are some applications that have been received through the city attorney recruitment. That process is open until October 28th, but do want to report that there have been some applications. So that's encouraging. Also, I had tentatively scheduled for October 20th the ethics training that we discussed for council members and commissioners and Form 700 staff. Given your current discussion, we might relook at the date of October 20th because it indicated that a lot of you had conflicts, but wanted to let you know it was tentatively set, but we will look at that again. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Deanne. Any future agenda items?
At the next meeting or subsequent meeting, I'd like to formally offer something to the council. Something other jurisdictions, other cities do this, but some kind of a wall of commemoration of some sort that we could maybe consider in the city would give the opportunity for the city to utilize that wall to commemorate noteworthy citizens and whomever, however that might develop. We just talked about the park naming earlier tonight too, and so I look at that as maybe an alternative to continually naming parks. So I'll put together a short narrative on that and would like to just present that to council for discussion and maybe see where that goes. Like I say, there's other cities that have some things. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's great. And also, I know we've been trying to make the Rukla Awards a little bit more recognizable in the community. That's a good place to sort of recognize those members as well.
A connection there too.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Great. Any other future agenda items? Any future strategic planning items? Nope. Okay. And Public Financing Authority action, none tonight. But there is City Council acting as a successor agency. So item 28, Rick.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been well over a year since we've had anything on this agenda, so I thought we should maybe, make sure we don't fall into any habits. As you know, the city has owned property when we existed as a redevelopment agency. And during the time that we existed and since the dissolution of the RDAs in 2012, these properties have sat idle with absolutely no interest in them and in development. However, as of recently, there's been renewed interest in the properties, I think, in part due to the Quarry Park and other things that are happening in the downtown. And we have a very significant interest in the parcel as known as the old school site between Oak and Pine on Pacific, as well as other interests, but particularly on that one. So we felt it appropriate to provide a procedures for the disposition of these properties, how to market, solicit, bids, process those bids, and receipt of offers and so forth, and how to work those through both the successor agency and oversight board so that there is consistency in how we apply this process regardless of who might submit a offer. So it's before you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. It follows similar patterns adopted by other cities throughout the state, and I propose that it be adopted as by this successor agency.
Great. Thank you. Any comments? Nope. Any member of the public like to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back. Do we need adoption? Yes.
We need action.
Yeah. Yeah. Council, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Mayor, I move item 28, the resolution of the successor agency of the Redevelopment Agency of the City of Rockland approving property disposition procedures for the formal Redevelopment Agency real estate assets.
I will second.
So motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much for coming out tonight. Meeting adjourned.